This is Reuven Levy. We're learning together that Gan HaShalom, the Garden of Peace, or Shalom Arush, in the Hebrew version of the book, page 210. A chapter dealing with the greatness of Shalom Bayit and how a man should make it his first priority above everything else that he has Shalom Bayit. Without Shalom Bayit, he's kidding himself, he's fooling himself. We are fooling ourselves if we think anything else is actually going correctly. The person finds that their business is going really well, that their learning is going really well, that their davening is going really well, but they haven't got Shalom Bayit. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. It can't be true. Because without Shalom Bayit, the person doesn't have the Shekhinah resting with him. So, can't be true that everything else is going correct. It's his imagination. Shalom Bayit is the main thing. Without that, the rest is not real. So, we're talking in this chapter, we're talking about a situation which the Rav had, where he had a Talmid was having difficulties in Shalom Bayit. Why? Because this Talmid was a recent Baal Teshuvah, was getting stronger in his Yiddishkeit, and his wife wasn't interested. She wasn't on the path with him. The student thought there was no hope, there was no chance that his wife would catch up, would get on the train. And he decided instead that he was going to switch trains, he was going to jump this one, he was going to divorce this wife, and find a better one going in the right direction, find a woman who was on the path to where he thought he wanted to be, where he thought he was. Truth is, as it turned out, he wasn't where he thought he was. And that new fast train that he jumped on was far too fast for him. He couldn't hold on. He fell very badly. And he wasn't holding at that place. Hashem wanted him to stay with the first wife, to suffer the difficulties of struggling with being a Baal Teshuvah with his first wife. Because then he would have really learned Emunah. Whatever he would have achieved would have been real. But he didn't do that. So when the second wife came along, she wasn't correct for him. And he wasn't able to keep up, and he fell into depression, and he stopped keeping Torah and mitzvahs, going to shul, couldn't handle it. The Rav writes, "Ubeemet im haya zocheh le'or shel Torah ha'imitit." And the truth is, if he would have merited to receive the true light of Torah, this chap, "Shedarcheh darcheh no'am," whose path is a pathway of peace, "v'chol netivosh teh ha'shalom," and all of its pathways of peace, different way of saying the same thing, "hu haya zocheh gam le'midot tovot," he would have also... Huh? No, pleasantness. Pleasantness.
Pleasant ways.
He would have also received, he would also have merited midot tovot, good midot. Radifat shalom, pursuing peace, ahava, love, anava, humility, vavitor, cancelling himself. Bavadai, certainly, shaya, mitchashev, isha shalom. He would have realized that his wife was doing for him only goodness. She raised his children. He would have waited for her with patience, very chutapayim, and patience. He would have given her warmth, love and encouragement. He would have judged her favorably and prayed on her. What's he saying? He's saying that the truth is, he wasn't really holding at that level of being of Torah that he thought he was at. Because if he was really holding at that level of Torah, he would have treated his wife very differently. He would have realized that actually, my job now is just to have patience, to have emunah, to pray. Then that would have shown that he was actually holding at that level of Torah. The fact that he wasn't really holding there meant that he was frustrated, upset, impatient, wanted to get a different wife, this one's not working, let's get a new one. Right? That proved the fact that where he was holding wasn't true. Because that's not the way you act when you're really at that level. However, since the fact that he did receive a certain type of light, as hu niyeh oyev shelishto, sorry, it's a question, and since he received this light of Torah, as hu niyeh oyev shelishto, from that we can see that he should turn out to be the enemy of his wife from the light of Torah? No way. Ha'im ha'or shel Torah amor lafoch et adam lachzar? Can the light of Torah actually cause a person to become cruel? Lekifui tova, to be ungrateful? Heichan ahava she'aita, where was the love? Eze ra'a hi asta lo, she'magia la yachas mezalzel kazeh. What evil did she do to him that she deserved him to treat her in such a disgraceful way? Right, just because she wasn't ready to start her life with Torah and mitzvahs, that means that he should divorce, he should treat her so badly. And in particular, she didn't prevent him from doing anything. It's not like she was stopping him from learning, or stopping him from learning Torah, or from prayer. She just wasn't interested herself. Just that she wasn't walking that same path with him. Why is it her fault that she did not merit yet to receive the light? Right? The gift of being a Baal Teshuva, coming back, doing Teshuva, making Teshuva, is a gift from Hashem. Person can't be upset with someone else. Why are you not making Teshuva? Why are you not already davening and learning Torah, keeping mitzvahs? Because the truth is, it's only a gift from Hashem that allows a person to see the light. Literally speaking, we say, use the expression, to see the light. But it is, it's the light of Torah. And if a person didn't yet see the light, you can't make him see the light. Hashem has to shine the light for him. If he didn't merit it, he didn't yet merit it. It's in Hashem's hands.
Is the light from Shavuos?
It's all part of it.
Part of Torah.
The light on Shavuot is a specific type of light of Torah. But there's light which is available every day. A person can see, to see Hashem in everything. And it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be a dafka, a Torah thing. A person can see the hand of Hashem in anything. Right? They could be walking into the street and nearly be hit by a bus, and a miracle happens, and then the bus doesn't hit them, and everything's from Hashem. Right? It doesn't have to be connected necessarily to Torah to see the light of Hashem. But to wake up, to see Hashem in whatever fashion, it's when Hashem decides to illuminate me. So there's so too in the case of a wife or a spouse, we can't blame them that they're not yet with the program.
Could be either, you know, works both ways. Could be a man or could be a woman.
Right.
But it doesn't have to conclude a marriage. You don't have to give up the marriage.
That's what he's saying. So he's saying, hey, don't give up the marriage, just pray. Prayer is going to change everything. Change everything. Mechamat shehu rak ha'ir la. And since he only criticized her, bizarre, disgraced her, decayed her, and caused her to be depressed and sad. So for Shehu Hemis Aleha et Yahudut Lagamri, it caused him to make her hate Judaism completely. Right? If Judaism is a stick that's used to beat someone up, as much one spouse to the next as a parent to a child is also the case. Someone who tries to force another person to keep Judaism, they're going to hate Judaism. Because they're going to see, this is what's causing that person to be so mean to me. What's causing it? It's that Judaism thing. If it wasn't for that, you'd be treating me nicely. So I'm blaming everything on that. Because he shows her that Torah is darkness, sinner, hate, dinim, judgment, yisurim, suffering. Right? What do I know about Torah? That it's suffering, and you have to suffer through it, and you have to do things that you don't want to do, and it's all dark, it has to shut off. Right? That's what a person receives if someone tries to force it down his throat.
It doesn't work the same way as if somebody says, why are you learning Torah at Kut Shal Pesta? You should be learning Torah at Eishet Bar.
Ask him why you think that. I mean, it's okay. That's your opinion. That's a good opinion. It's very interesting. Why? I mean, I would ask for more details. Why do you say that? If he's got a good reason, fine. You're free. Let's go. Eisha Torah, let's go. Why not? It's Torah. If he hasn't got a good reason, then he's just talking nonsense. If he's got a good reason, why not?
I would also say the same question could be asked between any other two yeshiva.
Uh-huh. All right, so if there's a good reason to go somewhere else, so show me the reasons, if it makes sense.
I'm not a fan of that one.
All right, if it's just because, right, they have nicer wallpaper, or this one has a nicer coffee, so it's an interesting reason. It's not good for me. Personally, I'm not there for the coffee, so right? It's a good reason, but it doesn't do anything for me. But tell me, if I particularly like strong coffee and they serve strong coffee, maybe I'll go there. Tell me, I'm happy to listen.
Rabbi Kusato would do that. He would switch for the good coffee.
Right?
He talked about coffee.
How funny he talks about coffee. Look, we have a tab after coffee, but Tom, it's good to hear what people have to say. As Rav Nachman gives a story. It's kilu a funny joke. It's like told like a joke. It's actually a deep parable. What's he taught? A story of a man goes walking in the woods. And in the woods, he meets a shoder, the robber, who wants to rob him. Mm-hmm. And he holds him up at gunpoint and says to him, I'm going to take all your money. And he holds a gun to him. So the man's a smart guy. So he says to him, you know what? I'm going to give you all my money. But first of all, if I go back to where I came from without my money, they're not going to believe that I got robbed in the woods. They're going to believe I spent it, or I gave it away, or I lost it. Can you do me a favor? You're going to take the money anyway, but it would really help me out. Can you just take your gun and shoot a hole in my hat so they can see that I got stopped by a robber? So he shoots a hole in the hat. He says, Tom, a hole in the hat, it's not so much. Shoot a hole in the bag as well. Shoot it in the bag. And then he finds something else, shoot a hole in this. Eventually he shoots a dozen holes, whatever, how many holes in all different things.
Six holes
altogether. And then he says, oh, just shoot a hole in my shoe. And he I've run out of bullets. Sorry. So he says, very good. And he grabs him and ties him up and runs off. Right? So it's told as a joke, and you could leave it there. But what's there? Rabbi Nachman doesn't tell jokes. I mean, he does, but not just for... everything he says is... So what is it? So the one explanation, you could also many have many different explanations of what Rabbi Nachman teaches, but one explanation is when you're in a dispute or an argument with someone, a robber who wants to just come and take... who wants to come and take, what should you do? You should let them fire all their ammunition. Yeah, what else have you got to say? And when they're completely finished, you overpower them with your argument, because they've got nothing left to say. So you let them get it all out first, and then you can succeed. If you try and argue in the midst, they've got all their arguments, they're going to argue back, because until they're finished with all their arguments, you're going to get blown away, because you're going to try and say something, and they're going to argue back, and you're going to say, and they're going to argue back. But if you let them speak first, and they finish all their gunpowder, so they've got nothing left to say. So then it's your turn. Your argument wins the day, because they've got nothing to respond. They've used all their... Something worth thinking about. Anyway.
You don't know what story this is.
That's the story. That what it called?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in the...
Beryl
and the Rubber. I don't know if it's called... It's in the Rav Kramer stories book, the one with the trees on the front.
Yeah, probably.
You know the one that you have here.
The one that's made for children. They're down in the bookshop down below.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if it's in.
Because I don't remember it. That's why I was asking. I don't remember it. Because I was re-reading.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's in this one. It's a very short one. I think it's this one.
If it's not, there's an illustrated version.
It'll be in this one. It might be called this. Hold on. 4, 6, 4.
And at the end of it, it has questions. What are we supposed to learn from the story?
No, that's not it. No.
It's downstairs.
But it's in the... Yeah, top of it somewhere. Anyways, why don't I bring that up? From what you were saying, yes. And if someone wants to tell you, you know, you should be really an awesome mayor. Why you are there? You should be an awesome mayor. So you can't argue at that point. Because if you turn at that point and say, no, actually, it's pretty good for me here. And then he's got, yeah, but you know what this, and yeah, you know what that. So what you then? Okay, why? Interesting. Don't say anything. Why? Well, hear him out completely. Anything else? Interesting. Yeah. Anything else? Anything else? When he's done, he's done. You can. You're in there.
My sense in Orsamaic, I'm here.
Fine. There's nothing wrong with Orsamaic. Absolutely. I'm not saying Orsamaic wrong. I'm saying if he's got a good reason to be Orsamaic, fine, go. It's nothing. It's a beautiful yeshiva. Teach beautiful Torah. If it's the most appropriate place for your neshama. Come on. It's fantastic.